says the house is never flooded, so they stayed and watched the storm come in. Their street turned into a raging river.
It has never been like this.
We had white caps in front of the house.
We sat here and watched the white caps.
Edward says her truck had water nearly to the top of the wheelbase, but it never reached the house. The sisters cooked meals in the gas fireplace for the 3 days they had no power. They have several downed trees and a damaged fence, but otherwise escaped the worst. So did Pam Scott and Larry Gold, who live on a canal that leads to the Trent River. They had evacuated and returned home Sunday to find that the storm surge came up to the fourth step that leads to their townhouse, but never got inside.
I am so thankful. I don't know how we escaped this.
They have minor damage in the yard and garage, and a car took on water. The couple has only lived in New Bern for 4 months. They were quick to heed the evacuation order.
I'm glad I left. I'm really glad because I felt safe.
Gold says he's been heartened to see people coming together to help New Bern in the disaster.
Regardless of what their backgrounds are, who they are, people coming from, you know, up and down the East Coast to lend a hand with a flatboat, saving these people. That makes, I hope, everybody stop and think, wow, there is civility left in this country.
Now those volunteers are moving their rescue boats inland, where some rivers are forecast to crest later this week at levels nearly double flood stage. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, New Bern, North Carolina.
This is NPR News.
And you're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. I'm News Director Jonathan Reeves. And joining me on the phone lines right now is Chetan Desai, who is the Democratic challenger to Rick Crawford in the 1st Congressional District race. He joins me this morning here on KASU. And Mr. Desai, thanks for joining us. Good morning to you, sir.
Morning, Jonathan. Good to be here.
It's good to have you on again. You know, we talked a little bit about this in the last time you were on and really didn't get a chance to really go into a full discussion about one of the ballot issues that's on, which is the minimum wage issue. Let's talk a little bit more about that and have a little bit of a fuller discussion about it. Kind of your thoughts on what the what it would be and what you think about that ballot issue.
Yeah, fully in favor of it. It's been long past time for Arkansans, working class Arkansans, to get a raise. We know what the current minimum wage, state and federal, means in terms of people not being able to live off of it, right? It takes about $13 an hour to afford a modest two-bedroom apartment in Arkansas, and we're not there. And look, we had, I know Congressman Crawford was on your show recently. He came on and, he hemmed it hot a little bit when you asked him about that question about the state ballot issue. And, what I heard from him, and here's just, a point of agreement that we have with the congressman. He said specifically that minimum wage is not designed to be a living wage. It's supplemental. It's introductory. We agree. But that's also the point, right? We want to make sure that there's a livable wage for individuals. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. Too many families are struggling to live off it. It's not just for high schoolers. A lot of Arkansans are trying to live off the minimum wage and are struggling to do so. So I am certainly in support of it. And what I heard from the congressman last time around was that he said he doesn't know, and it just sounded like sort of a Washington politician answer where he didn't directly answer your question.
Well, let me ask you this. The one of the things I think he was saying was that he was worried whether the state could afford it or not. What do you think about that, about whether the state and specifically small business owners could afford a minimum wage increase?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I hear that concern. At the same time, I have a disagreement there in terms of what we've heard from individuals, small business owners included, is that if you put more money in the pockets of individuals, they have more buying power, right? They're able to actually spend money, and that helps boost the economy. If you're investing in a living wage, you also are reducing the tax burden on taxpayers in terms of social safety net programs. So that's the point of disagreement there. I think overall, an increase in the minimum wage would actually boost the economy and help people out in order to make sure they have what they need.
Let me make sure. You said that earlier. You said $13 an hour would provide. What did you say again about an apartment and all that in Arkansas?
A two-bedroom apartment in Arkansas.
Right. So this only goes up to $11 an hour. Are you saying that's not enough?
Look, I think it's a start. I think I am pragmatic in the sense that we've got to start somewhere, and this is potentially what's palatable to people in Arkansas to start, that it's a gradual increase. I do think ultimately it needs to get to $15 an hour.
If you do something like that, I remember that there were what's the concern that if you keep raising it so much, like, for example, if you have some restaurant workers who are saying they wanted $15 an hour to work at a restaurant, now you're seeing kiosks at some places. Aren't you afraid that, you know, continually going up will lead to more automation and actually work against employment in Arkansas?
I mean, there's certainly that concern. At the same time, what I would want to see is an increase in investment in terms of education, in terms of job training programs. I think there's a couple of things that need to be done here. And what we haven't seen, right, is the investment in education in terms of job training, in terms of, you know, rural broadband. These are the things that would actually create jobs and create higher skilled individuals in the workforce. I'm talking about the here and now. Individuals who are struggling to live off minimum wage. We talk to these people every single day. It just, in our country, you shouldn't need to work two or more jobs at 40 or more hours per week. And if you still live in poverty, to me, that's just not okay.
Chintan Desai joins us here on KASU. And Chintan, one thing I was wanting to ask you about, let's switch gears for just a second about and talk about Medicaid work requirements. Kind of your thought on the latest of Medicaid work requirements, especially with the new farm bill coming in and that, and what's happened here in Arkansas very recently.
Yeah, I see these, and look, to expand a little bit on what I was just talking about, I see these as economic issues. You have to give individuals sort of what they need to be successful, and if there are people in the workforce who are and just generally living in the state who might not be employed, who are worried about health care, if we're talking about, and I'm sort of combining a couple issues, we're talking about the work requirements on SNAP. These kind of issues, basically, they don't empower individuals to gain employment. What it does is that it just creates a further burden on individuals in terms of the things they're worried about. So, look, 4,300 individuals now that don't have health care because of these work requirements, which, by the way, to me is just really an internet connectivity requirement because of the fact that you have to log on to the internet to report these work hours, and we know that many Arkansans simply don't have access to the internet. To me, again, it's an economic issue. You're not actually empowering individuals to have what they need to be successful.
So how do we start this conversation and actually move beyond a conversation to action to be able to provide what you say is needed to be able to help these people? How do we get that started?
Yeah, to me, again, it's the investment in education. Making sure that our K-12 education is solid, that people have, students have what they need there. It's job training, it's investment in career and technical training. We have one of the lowest rates of rural broadband connectivity here in Arkansas. These are the investments that we need to empower individuals to make sure that, they are gaining skills, that they are able to attain employment and also higher skilled employment. I think what's being proposed now, both in terms of the Medicaid work requirements and, again, talking about SNAP, these are things that are punitive and don't actually empower or encourage individuals to get what they need. What we know about the Medicaid work requirements specifically, right, for every one person that's, now in job training or has received a job, there have been 50 people that have been kicked off the rolls. That, to me, is just not the right direction to go in terms of promoting the economy and making sure people are getting to work.
So if you go to Washington, and that, how would you fund this? How would you support and find the funding to be able to start some of these, trainings and that to be able to kind of help, to help these people?
Yeah, I mean, you always have to think about what are the things that you need to cut. The first place that I would go to is we recently, right, in last year, passed a $1.5 trillion tax cut or the richest individuals in the country. I think certainly funds from there. I do have ideas on revenue generation if we're talking about small, less than 1% taxes on stock market transactions, which currently are not being taxed. These are just, these are some examples of ways in which we can fund some of these programs. I'm not naive. I don't think that, we should just introduce a bunch of new spending without figuring out how to pay for them. But to me, it is just shifting the priorities in the right direction. And, healthcare, affordable, high-quality healthcare, I think is the right priority, right? We need to make sure that people can be productive members of society. And to me, if they're not healthy, that's going to be a big deterrent.
Well, what are about going to healthcare? What are the specific issues that you see right now that are? I think, as we know, we live in the Delta, and so there's already going to be those health disparities and those health challenges anyway. In your view, what do you see are some of the significant health challenges that need to be addressed immediately?
Yeah, it's access and affordability. We do know that the Affordable Care Act did help in that regard. We do know that the expansion of Medicaid, specifically here in Arkansas, helped in that regard, but we still have too many people, particularly in the rural parts of Arkansas and in the first district, who don't have access to the clinics and facilities they need. Too often they're going to emergency rooms, and certainly some of the proposals that congressional Republicans have put out in terms of eliminating the Affordable Care Act, that's only going to make things worse. And so eventually what we do need to get to is a system where the government is providing health care for individuals, a single-payer system. I would argue that the intervening step there is introducing a public option so that that's available to individuals so that they can choose that as their preferred health care. And ultimately, I think most people will like that health care and opt into it, and that's what will eventually lead to more people adopting a government-sponsored healthcare.
I think that one of the things that people have been really concerned about, the main criticism, I know this is an argument that many have heard for a long, long time, is that there are some people who say the premiums are way too high. They're having to pay for stuff that they don't need. And that was probably one of the reasons why that it was not popular for everybody. Kind of your thoughts on, it may not be perfect, but how would you have fixed those and addressed some of those concerns about the premiums are way too high and I'm having to pay for stuff that I really don't need? How would you address that?
Yeah, I think one concrete example there, we got rid of the individual mandate recently, right? I think that has certainly contributed to an increase in premiums. You need more people in the pool, right, so that that can drive costs down. And eventually, look, I do think that if we make the proper investments in a Medicare for all-like system, yes, there is an initial investment, but that's the sort of thing that's going to eventually reduce costs. We do know that when we're talking about insurance that's led by companies that are for-profit, of course there are going to be costs that are always increasing there because they are for-profit entities. So I think that's just a couple things. I think bringing back the individual mandate, if we're talking about our current piece of legislation, and then eventually getting to a point where the government is providing that initial investment in a Medicare for all-like system.
Jinton Desai joining us here on KASU. You only have a few minutes left, and so with that, you were very critical not long ago about Congressman Crawford holding a fundraiser on the campus of Arkansas State University. Kind of tell us about why you had such a problem with this.
Yeah, I mean, look, Congressman Crawford has been one of the most inaccessible members of Congress, right? And he has refused to hold the town hall. He has refused to meet with ASU students for sort of a town hall-like meeting in the past. And then to hold a fundraiser on ASU's campus, $75 a plate, $750 per table, particularly with an individual member of Congress who, he's attacked our law enforcement. He has willingly deceived the American public with his memo. And to bring him in, in a public space, but then to, have a private, expensive fundraiser, that certainly was not something that I think people look favorably upon, and people want to talk to their congressman. They want to have access, and I think that kind of move speaks to just out of touch, just how out of touch Congressman Crawford really is.
Yeah, there'd be some that might argue, though, he was having a fundraiser. I mean, he has to raise money for his campaign. You have to raise money for your campaign. What's the difference?
Yeah, I mean, we're also not charging $750 per table, right? And that, I think to have it in a relatively public place, right? We're talking about Arkansas State's campus. But while at the same time, he's been someone that hasn't held public events, that literally refuses to do so, I think was, I don't think that was something that spoke very well of how he's been handling just interactions with the public. So I think that's the difference.
Chin Desai, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but we'll be talking to you next month. And also, just as a reminder for all of you, there will be a debate that's going to be taking place on AETN, and the first congressional district debate will be on Monday, October the 8th. And that will be, I think, around 8 o'clock that night. It'll air on AETN. It'll have Chinton, it'll have Mr. Crawford and also Mr. Presley in that. So that'll be on AETN. We'll also have it for you on our website here as well on KASU.org. Thank you so much for your time. I look forward to talking to you in October.
Thanks, Jonathan.
And for KASU, I'm Jonathan Reeves.
Their children, a shot at the American dream.
Listen to All Things Considered to hear the bigger picture from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons at 3 o'clock and weekend afternoons at 4 o'clock.
The numbers are not good. 10 million people in the Carolinas and Virginia under severe weather warnings. 5 million live in the potential path of Hurricane Florence. We'll probably measure what it leaves behind in feet rather than inches of rain. We're following Florence next time on 1A.
That focus on Hurricane Florence and its aftermath will be in the 10 o'clock hour of this morning's 1A on your connection to news, KASU.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Tire Rack, offering a tire decision guide to help customers find tires that fit their car and driving conditions. With a network of more than 7,000 independent installers, TireRack.com, helping drivers find, deliver, install. And from the Alliance for Lifetime Income, a nonprofit composed of financial services organizations working to educate Americans about options for securing protected lifetime income in retirement. More at Alliance for Lifetime Income.